Welcome to Common Sense Care, parenting gender-confused kids with truth and love. The gender industry's so-called affirmative care model is their one-size-fits-all answer for everyone who struggles with their sense of gender identity. But in no other area of medicine, education, or psychology is a one-size-fits-all treatment plan the best thing for every person. We believe that every child is an individual and deserves the care and treatment that's most appropriate for him or her. So welcome back. I'm Maria Keffler.
And I'm Erin Brewer. And what are we talking about today, Maria?
Well, I should ask you, what are we talking about today, Erin? Because I think this is going to be a little bit more in your wheelhouse than in my wheelhouse. So why don't you tell everyone what we're talking about?
Okay. We're going to talk about borderline personality disorder. And I want to sort of do a huge caveat that we are not diagnosing anybody. We are not therapists. We are just observing what's happening. And for those who don't know what borderline personality disorder is, really, if you look a lot at the diagnostic criteria and the way a lot of people who are trans identified are acting, it really looks like there's an overlap there. And a lot of therapists have suggested that this trans identity is often a result of a borderline personality disorder. And borderline personality disorder is a very significant disorder. It's not handed out lightly. And in our culture, it's very easy to sort of dismiss people as mentally ill and say, you know, oh, they're narcissistic, oh, they're bipolar, oh, they're depressed, oh, they must have anxiety or OCD. It's very easy to do that. But I want to remind people that this is a very significant diagnosis. It's also a very difficult diagnosis to treat. But it really is that people with borderline personality disorder really lack a sense of self. It's like they're constantly sort of floating around, trying to grab onto something to help define themselves. And when you look at a lot of the trans, especially the trans activists, people are very outspoken. There is a lot of this like wanting the outside world to validate them and affirm them, almost in a sense like they don't have that from within. And so they need it from outside in order to have a sense of self. And that's what's so concerning about this. These are people who have significant mental health issues. And instead of getting treatment, they're often just validated and affirmed and celebrated. And that's heartbreaking because these are people who deserve to have appropriate mental health services so that they can get healthy. This behavior is not healthy. It's very scary. The suicide rates are high for this disorder. It sort of reminds me of, you know, as a kid, if I had not gotten appropriate mental health care, I never would have had the opportunity to resolve the underlying trauma and to understand how profoundly that impacted me as a child. And I likely would have continued to self-harm and kind of maybe even developed borderline personality disorder because I wouldn't have had that strong sense of self that's so important and that normally develops over time throughout childhood. And so I wanted to play this video right off the bat for people who aren't familiar with borderline personality disorder, just to give them sort of a schema of what it is.
Yeah, because I was really unfamiliar with it. And so I've appreciated the resources that you shared with me. So let's watch that.
Here are some of the issues people with BPD face. Significant difficulty controlling and regulating emotions, otherwise known as emotional lability. Uncertainty of self, what psychiatrists call an unstable self-image. Having intense and unstable relationships repeatedly, which can involve idealizing people, then intensely disliking or devaluing them in relatively short intervals. Feeling an urgent need to avoid being abandoned by other people, even if the abandonment is only imagined. A chronic feeling of emptiness. Repeatedly acting in impulsive and risky ways. In terms of recovery, the best treatment results have been shown with a branch of psychological counseling known as dialectical behavioral therapy.
An affirmation. Those words are so positive. Everyone wants to be validated. Everyone wants to be affirmed. But we need to ask, what are we validating? What are we affirming? Are those good and healthy things? And I think in many cases, what we're validating and affirming with the trans community, the trans identified people, is just pushing them further down a route of mental health destruction.
Yeah, I agree. And that's something that makes me really sad is, you know, in most cases, people don't like being, you know, told that they're wrong. Mm-hmm. But it's very rare that we have this sort of demand of society to validate another person. Mm-hmm. And the fact that this has been kind of entrenched is sort of, I sort of feel like society has developed a borderline personality disorder. Yeah. Because it's just so crazy right now. So I thought we could kind of go through each of these diagnostic criteria that were discussed and sort of apply them to the trans movement and how we see this happening. And again, I want to point out that the people who have this disorder often are unaware of it. That's another thing that's sort of a hallmark of significant mental health issues is that the people who are experiencing them, they don't feel crazy. They feel like the world is crazy. And that's especially true in borderline personality disorder because they don't have a good, strong core self. So most people, if you know, craziness starts happening around them, they're able to sort of say, that's them, not me. Someone with borderline personality disorder gets kind of pulled into that and starts to feel very unstable. And so they want the outside world to sort of build a reality for them. And that's what I see happening here. So the first one is emotional lability. And for people who are unfamiliar with that term, it just means sort of going from one emotion to the other very quickly. And again, that's because they lack a core sense of self. And I don't know if you've ever been through a time when your stress level is really high and you just feel like you're bouncing from one emotion to the other. That's really common when people are highly stressed. But for the most part, we tend to have, you know, an ability to control our emotions. One of the things I see, again, the reason I say society's developing a borderline personality disorder is that we're now sort of accepting this sort of crazy emotional, like, that if somebody hurts our feelings, it's okay for us to fly off the handle. So I really feel like society has sort of developed this emotional ability, and children are now being taught that you know, people can actually, these, you know, some being misgendered or dead named is actual violence. Mm-hmm. And so we're, instead of teaching kids to be stable and solid, we're actually teaching them to be very fragile and to base their reality upon how other people interact with them. And that's really dangerous. Kids need to develop a core sense of self or they're incredibly vulnerable.
Well, and we've talked in a previous episode about locus of control, mm-hmm. and how we used to teach kids to have an internal locus of control, which meant I have power to change my life. My decisions determine my future to a certain degree. And now we're not teaching kids that anymore, which is what you said. We're teaching them, oh, if somebody uses a word you don't like, being suicidal is the appropriate response to that. That puts the locus of control outside of you. And it means you have no power over yourself, no power over your emotions or your choices or your life, that it's what everyone else does to you. And so the natural outgrowth of that logically is, oh, then we need to control everybody else, mm-hmm. so that they don't make me unhappy. And that's incredibly dangerous.
It is. It's really scary to me that we're teaching kids that, you know, that they don't have to control their emotions and that, you know, they should base their responses on, you know, these external stimuli. I mean, it really is the opposite of creating a mentally healthy person.
Yeah, it really is. And we're not doing these kids any favors, mm-hmm. because people who have an external locus of control, who think they have no power over their lives, they're notoriously bad friends, bad spouses, bad workers, because they never take responsibility for themselves. Everything is somebody else's fault.
Right. And that sort of goes into the unstable self-image that a lot of these people have, that, you know, I need you to define me, and the way you speak about me and the way that you interact with me defines who I am, because I don't have a core sense of self. Hmm. And we're teaching kids really early that their feelings are what define who they are rather than reality. And feelings are, and then on top of that, we're teaching them that their feelings come from external stimuli. And so we're basically creating a generation of kids who are likely to have symptoms of borderline personality disorder, which is so sad.
Yeah, it's like it's being created in them. It's being taught to them by this, oh yeah, your body has nothing to do with your gender, and internal is more important than external. And we are really, I would say, creating mental illness in an entire generation.
Yeah, it really makes me incredibly sad when I look at these kids and think about them being told that, you know, their biological reality is no longer important and it's all based on feelings. And that's why you have people who say, well, I'm transgender, I'm non-gender conforming, I'm non-binary, it just sort of depends on the day. Well, that's an indication of somebody who does not have a strong core sense of self. And this whole movement is embracing that and encouraging it rather than saying, wait a minute, it's really important to have that core sense of self. And ironically, they're also saying that gender is innate and non-changeable. So it's a very crazy making ideology, which again, if you raise kids in an environment where things aren't stable, where definitions keep changing, where there isn't really reality, that's the perfect environment to create mentally ill children.
This really reminds me of some studies that I've seen on attachment and how caregiver attachment relates to kids' long-term stability. And a researcher, and I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but she did a longitudinal study of kids and categorized them based on whether they had reliably good caregivers, reliably bad caregivers, or sort of mercurial, changeable. They couldn't, you know, if they couldn't figure out whether the caregiver was going to provide for them on any given day. And she followed them over decades. And what was so interesting is, as you would expect, kids who have reliably good caregivers who take care of their needs have the best outcomes. They're the most stable. They have the best success in life. Now, you would think, or I would think, that those with reliably bad caregivers would have the worst outcomes, but they don't. The ones who have the worst outcomes are the ones who have the unstable mercurial caregivers. Maybe their parents are alcoholics or drug addicted or have mental health issues. So the child never knows from day to day, am I going to be cared for or not? Am I going to get fed or am I going to have to feed myself? Those kids have the worst outcomes, and it was reasoned it's because they never have any firm foundation to stand on. The kids in the middle with the reliably bad caregivers, they knew. I'm always
going to say, yeah, when I was a kid, I knew my care wasn't there. And I actually was able to develop relationships primarily with teachers that were very nurturing and stable that I believe saved my life. I mean, And I sought those out because I knew I wasn't getting, there wasn't anything at home. And so if you have a kid who's like never quite sure, and a lot of times these kids will be shamed if they act as if the stability isn't there all the time. And that's why it's so dangerous. It's like, they're disciplined for thinking that they might not get the care that they need. Well, sometimes not getting the care that they need.
Right. And I think it speaks to that lack of a foundation, and children need a foundation that they can stand on. Again, best case is that they have good, reliable caregivers, or, you know, in the case of the trans community, trans ideology, the best case is that the kids are getting the same answer from all of the adults in their lives. And hopefully that would be that reality and biology actually matter. But when you completely destabilize kids and they don't know what's true and they don't know what they can depend on, they do end up with pretty bad outcomes.
Yeah, and it's not surprising. I think about these poor children who are being raised as babies by, you know, by moms who are being called dad and dads who are being called mom, and maybe another couple of people thrown into the mix because they're, you know, pansexual or, you know, whatever the newest term is, that these kids are in really dangerous situations because
I like the word you used. It's crazy making.
Yeah, it is crazy.
Really is a crazy making ideology.
Yeah. And that's something that I think is, you know, when kids are told that their parents love them, but then they're not treated in loving ways, that's sort of that mercurial caregiver that you talked about that can be so dangerous. But again, we have a whole generation of children who are sort of in that situation where they're being told even that if they do have good loving caregivers, that those good loving caregivers might not really be good loving caregivers if they don't do everything the child wants them to do. So, so this ideology is actually even undermining those good solid relationships that have good outcomes. It really is creating a generation of, you know, kids who are very vulnerable to mental illness.
Yeah. Well, what's the next aspect of borderline personality disorder?
It's kind of, it's idealization and devaluation. And we see this a lot in identity politics where somebody is raised up as, you know, wonderful, you know, they're so cool, they're so wonderful. But if they step one little bit off, you know, off the path that they're supposed to be on, then they are just dogpiled.
Like J.K. Rowling?
Yes. Yeah. And even, you know, even within small communities, I see this. People are so scared that they're going to do or say something. And so they have these weird ways of speaking where they'll get up there and they'll say, you know, my name is Erin Brewer and I'm speaking just from my own experience. And if I offend you, please come and talk to me because I don't mean to. They're so careful. They're just constantly like, it's like they're constantly walking on eggshells because if they do something wrong, they'll go from being, you know, having lots of social cred to being, you know, completely ostracized, and they know it. And so,
you told me about something that happened locally with you about a woman who had that exact same experience.
Yeah, it was really interesting. And I'm not sure there's been a couple of experiences, but there was a woman here who was not part of the transgender community. And she put together like a celebration rally for the transgender community here in my town. And she did or said something that pissed somebody off in that community. And they just completely ostracized her. They just went after her. And you know, here she was the one that set up the whole rally to celebrate them, but she did something wrong. And I think that's one of the reasons that a lot of kids are identifying as trans or non-binary, because that sort of gives them a pass. You know, if you're just, you know, a cisgender heterosexual white woman or white man, then you have like, you have to be so careful. But if you have that identity, then you kind of get a little bit of a pass.
And well, you get more than a little bit of a pass.
Yeah.
Nobody is allowed to question you.
Right.
And if you say something that would otherwise offend, well, I'm trans.
Right.
And so I am the most victimized person in the room.
Right. I get to center myself. So it is, it's very much, and it's so destructive because what's happening is that we have innate qualities that we, really are unable to do anything about, that we're being shamed for. Again, that's taking away our locus of control in a way that's really dangerous. The next one's is a feeling of abandonment, that people with borderline personality disorder are constantly worried about being abandoned because the people around them are the ones who are creating their sense of self. And so if somebody leaves, that it's almost like they're taking a part of that person with them because they don't have a core self. And so there's this constant, you know, fear of somebody leaving, of being abandoned. And I think that's part of where this, you know, I get to control your speech, I get to control what happens in the schools, I get to control policy. That's where this sort of unreasonable expectation of being able to control how people interact with you is coming from, I think.
Interesting. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. If you don't know who you are and you don't feel a sense of grounding in, you know, this is who Maria is, and you know, take it or leave it, I don't care what you think about me. You know, I know who I am. If you don't have that, then yeah, all of those people around you are required. They are, it is imperative that everyone around you do what you want and give you constant feedback and constant validation.
It kind of reminds me of Silly Putty. And I don't know if everybody who watches this has played with Silly Putty.
I remember Silly Putty. Yeah.
You put Silly Putty in a container and it will like move to fill that shape of the container. But as soon as you take it out of that container or take the container away, it'll sort of like become this blob and just sort of flow over the surface that it is. And one of the things that it'll do is if you put it on newspaper, it'll pick up the print of the newspaper. And that just reminds me a lot of how someone's borderline personality is they need the people around them as sort of their container. And if they don't have it, they start to sort of fall apart until they find somebody else to stand in as a form for them to push back against again, because they don't have that core sense of self.
Oh, that's so sad.
It's an incredibly scary diagnosis. And that's something that I think is important to remember is that, you know, people are suffering from this. They're seriously mentally ill and they are acting in ways that are kind of reprehensible and can be very offensive. And sometimes it's hard to have compassion for them. But it is important to remember that, first of all, they probably don't realize they have a mental illness. Typically, society has been the one to give them that feedback, and we're no longer giving them that feedback. The next one is feeling empty. And again, that's the lack of sense of self. So they're, you know, they need somebody from outside them to fill them up constantly because they're not able to do that for themselves.
I'm reminded of someone I know who just, it's like, it's a black hole of need. No amount of affirmation, validation, encouragement, appreciation is ever enough. It's like it gives a momentary high and then it immediately dissipates and more is needed.
And that plays into the sort of the last diagnostic criteria that was discussed in this video, which is impulsivity and risk-taking. And, you know, most people have some sense of not wanting to hurt themselves. And so, but a lot of times people with borderline personality disorder, they need that high. So they do things, you know, sexually, especially, they're very risky because they're looking for, you know, the outside affirmation. And so a lot of really risky sexual behavior takes place. And again, we're seeing that trying to be normalized in this, what I would call borderline personality society that we're developing, because they want to justify the very risky behavior that they're engaging in that helps them define themselves.
Huh, that's so interesting. And I know we've talked before about there's this idea that you can't tell anyone that there's a boundary. You can't tell anyone that, oh, this is too far, this is not acceptable, this is not okay. And we just see that more and more in the sex ed in school and in the pornography industry. You know, I just saw something yesterday that someone on social media was arguing that we need to make porn for kids because porn has gotten so brutal and so perverse that we need to start making some more soft porn that can kind of ease kids into it before they get to the more hardcore. I know, isn't that horrific?
Yeah, it's just, it's an indication of how sick our society is right now. And one of the things that I think about that emptiness and this whole, you know, very confusing experience of having borderline personality disorder is that a lot of these kids are being given the information that if they transition, then they're going to become themselves, their authentic selves, their true selves. And so they keep engaging in, you know, first, you know, puberty blockers. Well, that didn't help. Okay, I'll take cross-sex hormones. Well, that didn't help. Okay, I'll get this surgery and that surgery and this surgery. All of it is an attempt to have that sense of self, to feel like somebody. And then they get to the end of all of the interventions and it hasn't helped. It hasn't cured them of this very significant mental illness. And they're left very vulnerable. And I think that's why the suicide rates among those who have medically transitioned are so high after about 10 years, because they suddenly realize They did all this stuff and it didn't help. It didn't provide them with that core sense of self that they so desperately wanted.
And that's very cult-like, because what do cults offer? They offer heaven. They offer nirvana. They offer, you know, you're going to attain the state of enlightenment or attain the state of perfection. And you're right. In the gender cult, they keep promising, oh, you'll get that after puberty blockers. Oh, you'll get that after hormones. Oh, you'll get that attainment of perfection after you surgically alter yourself. And we see this so often in detransitioners who've gotten to the end of the road, or hopefully they realized that the road they were on was a bad one before they went too far. But even though they have left the cult, they've still got that doctrine so deep inside of them. And you'll hear them talk and they'll say, I don't mean to take away from any true trans experience. This, as you were saying, this is just my experience, because they still believe those tenets, those lies that the cult taught them. Even once they've recognized how wrong it is, they still have more healing to do. They still have to get completely out of the cult mindset.
And they're also incredibly afraid of abandonment. People, you know, a lot of the people who are saying things like, oh, well, it was just my experience. I know there are true trans out there. They don't want to be abandoned by, you know, their peers and the community, because they know it's risky to say there's no such thing as being transgender. The transitioning is an intervention, not an identity. They're afraid to say that because they know that they're going to lose, you know, friends. They might lose relatives. They're going to lose. They're going to be, you know, oftentimes called transphobic, and that's really dangerous.
Well, we see that too, just among the various groups of people that are doing what we're doing, which is trying to save kids from medicalization, push back on this. We were just talking about this morning. We keep coming across different people and groups who accept that there's true trans, or they say, we're not transphobic. And that really bothers me when I hear people say that, because that term transphobic is very loaded. It has been created by the gender industry to silence anyone who would question anything about the gender industry. So when I hear people who are supposedly trying to save kids, supposedly trying to push back on policy, when they start saying, oh, but we're not transphobic, what I see is somebody who's trying to play both sides of the field. You know, they want to say, I believe in truth. I believe in reality. I believe in biology, but don't be mad at me because I'm not bad.
I'm not one of those people who is trying to really enforce truth. And I think it's really dangerous because, again, a lot of this comes back to the fact that people who have mental illness are often unaware of it, and they need people to let them know that their behavior is not healthy, that their behavior is not in the best interest of themselves or society. That's typically been our job, and to encourage them to get mental health services. Well, if you have a group that's saying, well, there are some people who are true trans, rather than noting that transitioning is an intervention, then you're going to, you know, every person who's feeling this way is going to be like, oh, I'm that one person who's true trans. And they're not going to get the mental health services that they need. I wanted to play a clip really quickly, and I don't want to indicate that this person has borderline personality disorder, but I just want to show that this is very indicative of somebody who doesn't have a good, strong core self. This is what it looked like.
And so the word that I use most dear to my heart and for my gender identity is the term demi-woman. And so for me, demi-woman means that my identity is complex and nuanced, and I hold multiplicities. And my identity is rooted partially in being a woman and partially in some non-binary category. And so I am a woman and I am non-binary. I also will call myself a trans woman. I am transgender. I am a non-binary woman. There's a lot of different ways and words that I might use to describe my own identity and my own self, because I contain multitudes.
Well, Maria, when I see that, I see someone who's really struggling with their core sense of identity. And it's really uncomfortable when you don't have a good, strong core sense of yourself. I don't know if you've ever gone through a period in your life where you've had a major shift in your, you know, identity, in sort of your belief system or your experiences. It's very scary. It's very destabilizing, and it takes a while to sort of reconstruct yourself. When you're in that feeling of, you know, kind of being unstable, it can be really disturbing. In this case, this guy is sort of celebrating. He says, I contain multitudes, as if that's, you know, a positive thing. When in fact, it's really, I mean, he's celebrating basically lacking a core sense of self.
It made me think about one of my kids said that at their school, at the high school, they had a board on the wall that people could write all their identity statements on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am a lesbian, ambi, gender, whatever. But my child who saw this said it was really confusing because a lot of the stuff was very contradictory. Like, you can't be a boy and non-binary.
No.
You can't be a lesbian and heterosexual. Mm-hmm. And I saw that in this video clip. This is somebody who does not know who he is.
No.
And we really shouldn't celebrate that. No. Not that as the goal.
And if you go through the rest of the video, it's just so telling. And it's hard not to just think this is an egotistical guy, because that's kind of how he comes off, because he's constantly mentioning how, you know, people need to validate him, or how he feels invalidated if somebody does something. Well, without ever even occurring to him that it's not society's job to validate him. That's really not, that's not society's role. It never has been, and it shouldn't be, because if society's role is to validate you as who you believe you are, then we lose all sense of priority, of propriety. People can go out and kill other people, you know, because my identity is a murderer, and you can't question that. You need to validate it. And that's where historically society has created some firm boundaries that people don't cross. And we've also given them feedback that if somebody's acting crazy, we let them know, because that's in their best interest as well as society's interest.
Well, I think too about socialization of children. And, you know, part of the reason that kids go to school is for socialization. And the process of socialization is really getting feedback on your behavior. We don't ever want to see bullying. We don't ever want to see kids getting hurt. But we actually do need that sort of iron sharpening iron process. Yeah. But when we've got this policy that you can't ever criticize, question kids who are trans identified, they're not getting any social feedback on what's acceptable and what's not.
Yeah, it really reminds me, I went through a period where I was bulimic in high school, and I was very systematic about it, because I knew if somebody caught me throwing up, that I was going to get negative feedback, and I might get put into counseling. And so I was very careful about it. I had a whole system arranged so that I could do it without getting caught at home, at school. I was very careful. If I had been told, oh, it's okay, go ahead, throw up, there's a chance I wouldn't be alive today, because bulimia is incredibly hard on your body. It causes your teeth to fall out. It causes heart disease. It's incredibly bad for you. But if I had thought, oh, no big deal, I can be bulimic, if I were still alive, I probably still would be doing that. Mm-hmm. Instead, I got a clear message. You know, at some point I was caught at school, and I got a clear message that that was not good behavior, that it was dangerous, and I got some help for it. Mm-hmm. And that's what's, again, so heartbreaking to me about these kids and adults, is that they're not getting those messages that their behavior is harming them as well as society.
Mm-hmm.
Not being told they need help. They're not getting the mental health services that they need. And if these people are suffering from borderline personality disorder, the trans identity isn't going to help. It's just going to keep spiraling.
It's going to make it worse.
Exactly. It's going to
make that, it reinforces the borderline personality disorder symptoms. I was just sitting here thinking, so I wonder, are people who are trans identified more likely to have borderline personality disorder? Or does claiming a transgender identity create a borderline personality disorder?
Yeah, and I suspect both are true, because if you're constantly being given this message that you're, you know, who you are is dictated by how others interact with you, and oh boy, if somebody dead names you, they've just inflicted violence on you. I mean, this is creating you know, it's sort of like a breeding ground for borderline personality disorder. And again, once you've taken away that core sense of self, it's hard to get it back. And so it you know, it's just confounding to me why we are embracing an ideology as a society that encourages the breakdown of that core sense of self.
That's a really good question. And unfortunately, I don't think we have really many answers today.
But it is important for people to understand, again, that people with borderline personality disorder often have no clue that they have it. They can behave in ways that are incredibly erratic, that make no sense. They can make incredible demands on those around them, have temper tantrums. These are people who need help. And so again, it's you know, as I watched the fellow that we had on the clip, it was hard for me to feel a sense of compassion as he went on and, you know, really indicated that any woman who wanted to define womanhood based on biology was somehow wrong and bigoted and was hurting him. You know, this is a man who's basically saying me defending myself as a woman is hurting him. You know, it was hard to feel that sense of compassion because, you know, his behavior can be was what I felt was reprehensible. But at the same time, if we don't recognize this as a mental health issue, if we just assume these are, you know, jerks who can pull it together, if they get the appropriate, you know, societal response, then we're not addressing sort of the core issue. And I really want to encourage us to act as a society that doesn't have borderline personality disorder, which is to speak truth, to have firm boundaries. Again, not to accept the ridiculous notion that some people are true trans, which is, again, that's a myth. That's a that's trying to placate the person who has a mental health issue rather than speaking truth and rather than insisting on reality.
Well, and I was just talking to a mom who they have a transgender identified teenager, and her husband just wants to go along to make peace in the house because the teenager is very militant, very angry, you know, all those things we talked about. And the husband's like, let's just give the child what she wants so that we have peace. And, you know, I told the mom, there's no end to that. That's kind of credit card parenting. It's kind of like, I don't want to deal with it today. Well, you're going to deal with it tomorrow with interest. There's no end to this. There's no point. I don't know of very many or any transgender identified people who 10 or 15 years out say, yes, I am completely at peace with everything that has happened.
No. In fact, they blame those of us who aren't affirming them for their problems rather than accepting responsibility. And so again, children need those firm boundaries. They are in a process of creating identity. And if they have parents who just sort of, oh, this is too hard, I don't want to set up these firm boundaries, they're really doing that child a huge disservice.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Erin, for all of the good information you gave us today.
It's a hard topic, but I think it's really important that we recognize, you know, the significant mental health issues that some of these people are struggling with.
Yeah, it is important because, as you said, they're not getting the help they need. They're not getting real help. They're just actually getting pushed further down the road of more and more difficult mental health issues.
Exactly. Well, thank you, Maria.
Thank you. And we will see you next time.
Sounds good.
We are not doctors or therapists. We are not giving medical or psychiatric advice, and we offer no guarantee of outcomes. We simply want to talk about how to support and love kids using long understood best practices from the fields of psychology, education, and child development. We're glad you joined in our conversation today, and we hope that you took away something you can put in your toolkit for parenting your gender-confused kids with truth and love.